Kids for Love. It's a project, a mission, and a radio show. Join Deborah Beauvais as she highlights her young co-hosts. Listen to their inspirational stories in starting nonprofits and their life work to help other kids in need. We'll learn from these conscious kids how serving others can heal our own lives while spreading love to the masses. We invite you to join in for spirited conversation filled with creative ideas and possibilities to start your own mission. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world by getting inspired to help others in need. Kids for Love Project, celebrating kids that empower others.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah Beauvais, host of the Kids for Love Project and radio show. I'm also the founder and owner of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. So if you're tuning in for the first time, this is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast. We are the media partner for the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. And whenever you hear about a workshop that we're promoting, it is 20% off. So keep that in mind. And the Omega is congruent with our mission and vision as well. Well, as we all know, that we usually welcome two different amazing kids that have started nonprofits making a difference in the world. But today we are with Janet Demeter, who is the founder of JacksAngelsFoundation.com. You may have heard a show a while back with Wendy Fashan, and she is a dear friend of ours, and we are raising awareness for DIPG. It's a pediatric brainstem tumor disease, and kids are usually diagnosed between 5 and 10 years old, and Wendy's son was actually diagnosed at 19 years old, and Janet's little one was 3 years old. So I guess you never know. So without further ado, we're bringing her in. She's going to explain about DIPG, what she is doing, not only in D.C., but she has started an advocacy group, and there's over 200 members, and they're going to Washington. Come on in, Janet, and thank you so much for coming on board.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to, off the bat, say, really, there are two children featured today. And our kids all die, unfortunately, DIPG children, and so far. And so my little Jack inspired Jack's Angels. And, of course, Wendy's amazing son, Neil, inspires this incredible work that she's doing for legislation to fight for these kids with, all pediatric cancers are marginalized as rare. And so we all have that fight of being relevant and important, as if we had to do that for our children's lives, but we do, unfortunately. And so yeah. The reason why I, was inspired originally to do something was because of the darkness of my experience, of our experience when my son was diagnosed with DIPG in 2011, the end of 2011. There was no hope. And everywhere I'd turn, I'm like, why hasn't more been done? They made me feel as if it was so rare. I lived in Antarctica, and that was always the excuse as to why there's so little research activity. Well, I didn't realize until after my son died that brain cancer is the leading cause of death in children with cancer. And DIPG is responsible for most of those deaths every year. And so it's hardly irrelevant, yet this is common to the pediatric cancer experience. There are few, if any, solutions for our kids. Yes, we've made amazing strides with adult leukemia research, which has in turn been translatable to a certain extent for children, but most exclusively pediatric cancers are deadly, and we don't have solutions for them. And the statistics that are touted, 4 out of 5 surviving or not, are not truly representative of the realities that we live with. So it's a fight for awareness.
Is it genetic or epigenetic or both?
They are. That's what they're trying to work on. They okay. have found through genomic sequencing and testing, and that's really the way that DIPG research in particular, this particular brain cancer is the most chemotherapy resistant, and because of its location in the center of the head, it's really hard to even get medicine there. And so it's really the cutting edge of genomic genetic medicine because and precision medicine because it has it's heterogeneous, meaning it's not the same everywhere. It can appear as an astrocytoma grade 3 and still kill your child. It can be a glioblastoma multiforme. Usually most autopsies reveal that. But they've found that this tumor is almost as, you know, fingerprint genetically for each child. There's like a probability curve of mutations that children, that each individual child will have. There's like 90% will have XY mutation in this area, mm-hmm. and then there'll be like 30% of the kids will have this one. And so, you know, when you find, it's rare for a child to survive past year, but the ones that do usually have these, you know, they're starting to see patterns of, you know, the differences between some of these tumors, but we're just at the beginning, and we're so lucky that we have some real pioneering and crusading researchers in our country working very hard at this. But, the issue's always been funding.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And that's what you're raising, funding research, so that they can do all the things that they need to do. Have they found anyone? I thought I had read that there were a few survivors.
There are very few and far between, and you have to use that term in a relative fashion because really past 5 years, it's exceedingly rare if there's anyone. I mean, we'll never say no, but there's also controversy regarding, you know, is it because their brainstem gliomas in general are deadly, but some of them tend to have a few survivors here and there, and the DIPG is usually the worst. They're really, you know, next to none. But, you know, every now and then when you find or hear of a controversial case like that, there's always controversy surrounding, well, was it really a true case? And, you know, it goes, and so it goes. But it's exceedingly, if anything is truly rare, that is survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's,
yeah.
you know, in hundreds of millions chances for that. But it happens there, and it's hard to get such people to come forward for the reasons I just said. No one wants to be in the middle of controversy. Oftentimes, you know, the doctors don't want sometimes this information to be out. You hear all sorts of stories when it comes straight from people who have been through this kind of experience, but it's not well documented. It's not mm-hmm. shared. Sometimes they're in other countries. Like I heard of a case in Germany in the 70s that it just disappeared. I forget what they call that, but, you know, it was spontaneous remission, you know. And uh-huh. with DIPG, there's never remission. It's always, you know, you get a little break sometimes from the radiation. That's standard treatment. Standard treatment hasn't changed in over 50 years since Neil Armstrong's daughter died of it in 1962. Standard treatment is the same. Prognosis is the same. And it's not so much I'm any kind of pioneer in raising funds for research. I wish I could raise more money for research, but raising awareness to the issue that our children are neglected and marginalized and sidelined in our medical research industry. It's not like the emergency room where you save the dying first or you save the children first or send them to a pediatric hospital. No, it's they are not a priority. They're just not. And we're just asking that, you know, this issue be addressed and that, you know, we acknowledge the problem. What can we do about it? Because all
right.
of us with kids with DIPG, it's similar deadly pediatric cancers here. Oh, well, yeah, it's just sad. It's one of those orphan diseases. And, you know, the numbers aren't great enough for investors, that was
crazy.
One of the things that motivated me. It's like, God, put me to work. This is wrong.
Yes, so. Yes. And it's amazing how much work you have done. Do you feel comfortable to share about little Jack? Because with reading about him, he was so special.
Aw, thank you. You know, I would love to. And I have a radio show called Childhood Cancer Talk Radio, and I'll tell you, sometimes I've mentioned
yes,
some, but it's always about everyone else. And so, I kind of err on the side of not speaking about him enough, because I don't want to be, you know, thought of, or I want to always check any impulses I may have of my own selfishly to make it more about my story than anyone else's. But yes,
your story is everyone else's story.
Right,
Jane.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
He was the love of my life, you know, and it's I will say one thing in beginning is that I feel that I was incredibly blessed to be able to meet one of, you know, your whole worldview has to change when you, or at least certain parts of it become more active, like your understanding that there's life and there are beings and there's a whole universe that we're largely unaware of in our human condition.
Right.
I believe in angels. I believe in, you know, different kinds of beings and spirits that are ultimately wonderful and benevolent. And I feel like I had the opportunity to connect with, spend time with an angel, truly, to me, in the flesh, for even though it was a short time. I feel that I was just lucky to be aware of that, and it was awful, you know, to lose him. but he was always had this sense about him. We lost everything in a fire when he was only 5 weeks old, and so we were living in the garage studio of a friend of ours for a month or two until we could find somewhere else to live. And he started waking up every morning with this giant smile for me. And everyone said, oh, you know, that's gas or whatever. And I was like, no, it's not. He just had this way of making me feel like everything was going to be okay, no matter what. And I hold on to that. That's just mm-hmm. how he was. And I learned, he was very intelligent, very precocious for his age. He loved vocabulary and words like delectable and, you know,
yes.
Delicious. He loved numbers and letters like most kids his age, but he would like try to learn the alphabet in different languages. He liked plain geometry and all the different shapes, like trapezoids and parallelograms.
Yes.
And
so when you describe him, for me personally, he sounds like an old soul, that he was
yes.
really a genius in his 3 years. He came to teach your family so much. Yeah.
Well, he did. There was one thing in particular, and that's why I love the whole theme of your show. Because love is the only thing that's real. That was the main spiritual lesson that I've gotten many times in my life. That's, you know, an ongoing theme, and I keep learning more every day. But even a word like hate, H-A-T-E, oh my gosh, if you said that word around him, he would start crying, and he thought you were aiming it at him. And
really?
it was a painful way to learn it, but I realized there's no good reason to use that word. There just isn't. I call him my little Jesus, because that's what he taught. He taught everything I ever learned that Jesus taught, and I was raised, you know, in the Episcopalian Church, da, 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 but from my own reading of scriptures, that simple message really was, and acting on it in all ways that you can in your life. He embodied that. But at the same time, he had this amazing sense of humor And when I was bad, you know, when mommy was bad or said a bad word, because I'm not very good in my car when I'm driving, he would like, he would take the bad word and he would start repeating it just because he knew that it would bother me.
Yes.
And he'd get everybody laughing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that word. But, you know, so he had his own way of teaching that used humor or, you know, his own pain.
Yeah, well, you mentioned in telling his story on your website that he had the opportunity for a very short time to go to school. And
yeah.
he would remember their names, P for Paul, and do the alphabet. And I thought that was so precious.
Yes, he would get on the bus and he would say, oh, you're T for Terry. You're P for Paul. And that's how he would greet everyone.
Yeah.
And he loved music. He had a perfect tonal memory. I remember the music teacher was just like blown away. Just say, your son, and I can't believe you. And he would love to sing, and he loved instruments. I always knew that, you know, he would most likely master a few instruments if he had been able to stay with us. But it was devastating to lose him because, you know, here I am, a parent, and I feel so inadequate, you know, when they really look to you for comfort and to guide them. And he kept imagining a dark door. And he would say, Mommy, I keep thinking of this door. It's scary. And I'm like, the only thing I could do with him is say, Jack, don't worry. I know it's going to look really, really dark at first. But if you open that door and you keep looking, all of a sudden you're going to start to see this beautiful light to appear. And it's going to get bigger and bigger. And you're going to realize you're in a wonderful place. There's nothing to be afraid of, and you'll know exactly where to go. And that was all I could do for him. And what's strange is that I ended up doing that for my uncle, who just passed away last December, who I love very much and who was our number one patron of our foundation to get it started. He and his wife Karen, as she was dying, donated some money so that we could, you know, start.
Right.
But it's hard though when they're going through these physical changes, and you know, it's all new territory for everyone. And sometimes when I hear older kids talk about their experience, which is very helpful, it reminds me of what Jack went through so bravely. You know, all these kids, they retain their cognitive faculties, really, for the most part, as their bodies decline and they lose their bodies until respiration ceases. It's really a very cruel, it's a very cruel disease and a cruel death for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And you question that, too. Why does that have to be, So,
well, they don't. We just don't have anything for them yet, and that's why the research right now is so important and it's so promising. The burden of it is shouldered really by the bereaved community of parents who have foundations that raise money for research. I mean, they're making the research happen right now. So, wherever people are listening from, support your local childhood cancer organization, whether it's just. Whether it's family support or research or whatever, they need your support because truly, unfortunately, our government doesn't really pick up the slack for our children. You know, I would always think of them as the government as caring for the vulnerable and those who are underserved, you know, but unfortunately, with the way the medical research system works, it's hard. It's hard to get it to.
Right.
They try.
Right.
The National Cancer.
Well, I want to talk more about what you have done. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you to share, if you may, a few weeks before Jack transitioned to the other side,
right.
as I say, angels came.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. At this point, he was in progression, meaning the tumor was growing again, and he was starting to lose, had troubles with balance, and I had my mother over even at one point, and so I didn't want him to be alone because I didn't want him to fall. He fell a couple times and hit his head, which is like the last thing you want to have happen. So I heard him laughing really hard upstairs. We're in the main bedroom and talking. And then all of a sudden, this huge peal of laughter again. And I was looking around like, Sophie was downstairs. And I thought, oh, well, he must be with his dad. And then I realized the dad was out feeding the horse. I'm like, what? And then I was scared. I'm like, oh, no, what if he falls off? Is he on the bed? Is he going to fall off? So, and he's still carrying on talking. I'm like, who's he with? So I come upstairs and I come in the room and it just feels charged with energy. I don't know how to explain it. It was an intense feeling. And I come in the room and I don't see anyone but him. He's sitting on the bed and he's playing with his erase board, which he would love. I wish he did more on paper. I could have kept him. He loved his erase board.
Yeah.
And he said, Mommy, I saw two white ghosts. And I'm like, what? And I called my husband. I was like, Barry, come up. Jack, come on up. Yeah, I need to talk to you about something. And because I was just a little shocked by the whole experience. And apparently, as my husband was talking to him, as I went looking for Sophie, he said
and
that they had wings.
Girl, we should mention.
Yes, my Sophie. The siblings suffer the most, I think, of the family. At any rate, so he had seen these ghosts, and they were making him laugh so that he wouldn't be scared, because he was scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so after they made him laugh, then he could talk to them. But he said that, Daddy, they said I was going to have to go with them soon. And he said, I don't want to go, Daddy. And my husband's like, I don't want you to go either. And they just sat there and cried. And so I knew, that's right, when they left the room, I sat in there and I said, not yet. You are not taking my son yet. As much as I know the angels are beings of love, I just had to assert my authority as his earthly mother for
as a mom.
Another little bit of time. But, I know they're there. I know. I feel he's around me a lot. I was determined to, didn't always feel that way, but I was determined to continue having some kind of a relationship with my son. I just thought that, for me, that was very, very, very important and continues to be.
Yes, and natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even though, from once we are conscious of a higher purpose and all, much like you spoke earlier, and we believe that we're all eternal because we are.
Whoops,
our souls
I lost you there
on.
For a second. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. Good.
Okay. I was mentioning about our souls are eternal, and
yes.
Our containers or our bodies are just temporary while we're here. And so we live on for eternity. However, living on Earth, the families that are living on Earth, it makes it quite a challenge to live without your loved ones, even though mm-hmm. you may have bursts of miracles, little miracles happen, and there's a message sent. It soothes the heart, but it isn't easy.
No, yeah. No, it no. continues. I mean, yeah, it continues. It parallels your, I think, one's own development as a person. And as, a spiritual development as well.
Absolutely.
I don't claim it to be any paragon of that by any means, but it does It forces you to deal with that reality. Mm-hmm. Or you can just cave into depression. And I mean, there's so many different factors affecting every person. And there's no judgment. There's no right way or wrong way mm-hmm. to get right. through it. We just do what we can, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, I want to thank you before we go on to our break. I want to thank you for sharing your innermost feelings and the bright light that Jack is still, and sharing yeah. about him, because you can, if you have any compassion in yourself, you can really feel and relate to your journey with him and the whole family. Yeah. So for everyone out there, I would like to share, Janet actually has two websites. The first one was set up in Jack's name, jacksangelsfoundation.com. And then there is another site, and I'm going to spell it. And I believe it's the National DIPG Awareness Resolution. It's HRES 69. That's all one word. HRES69.org. And when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, I know there are trials out there, so I'd like to touch on that. And I should mention, too, that there were 21 states in 2017, and this year you've had 31 states declare mm-hmm. that May 17th is DIPG Awareness Day. So we'll be back. Stay with us.
Invite the Kids for Love Project, an enrichment program, into your school, classroom, or wellness center. Kids for Love Project is focused on teaching kids unconditional love for self and others. The project is a journey into self-discovery. It consists of fun, creative tools to learn self-love, like I choose love, I am love, I stand in love, and utilizing one's energies with reconnective healing and tuning into one's intuition for inner guidance, plus connecting to our natural surroundings. Kids who hold love for self do not bully or harm others. Let's cultivate a kinder world that holds compassion for all. Teaching the power of love to our kids is the way. To learn more or to bring Kids for Love Project to your school, contact Deborah Beauvais, 508-226-1723. That's 508-226-1723. Or go to our Kids for Love Project on Facebook.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Stroll through the garden, relax by the lake, or try a daily yoga or movement class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
Kids for Love. It's a project, a mission, and a radio show. And it's on the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Come join Deborah Beauvais and young co-hosts every Wednesday at 4 p.m. and 4 a.m. Eastern to celebrate kids making a difference. We invite kids to share stories of those helping others. And teachers can share new school programs that are creating harmony amongst the kids. Let's raise the bar together and cultivate a kinder world. Kids for Love Project. Celebrating kids who are helping others.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. You're listening to the Kids for Love Project radio show, and you can hear it every Wednesday, 4 a.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as Saturdays, 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we are with Janet Demeter. We are talking about so many things, but our main objective is to raise awareness for DIPG. It's a pediatric brainstem tumors, where the show is dedicated in memory of little Jack Demeter, and then Wendy Fashan's son, Eugene, we called him Neil Fashan. And I want to get right into what you've accomplished in your time setting up this foundation. It's like, wow, you've accomplished a lot, even though for you it may not be enough.
Well, I appreciate you saying that because, you know, it's wing and prayer. it's a business, any charity is, but at the same time, for us, it's just, you know, my mindset is just idealism and advocacy, and so, you know, things get done by wing and prayer. That's just what I say. We always have just enough donations to survive and to continue our work, and we're kind of, my focus this last year has been more on advocacy and the bill that's in Congress right now, so that hopefully in the next year or so we'll be able to do more fundraising festivals and with fun activities for children. We really hope to, with our events, promote arts and education for kids. That's kind of one of our give back long-term goals as a foundation. But that said, in the beginning, our first events were music and art festivals for children locally, and we've done a couple of runs. It was very difficult for me to do those. They were fun. People liked them, but I was basically trying to do it all myself, and it was, I don't recommend that. especially when your committee at the last minute doesn't show up. That's just really, you got to make sure you have a good team if you're going to try to plan a big event. But so my forte has been more in writing letters, and writing letters, articles, communicating with legislators, joining in. My first advocacy trip, in part-time joined with the Alliance for Medical Research, where I kind of learned how groups advocate, and I started doing a lot of visiting of offices on my own because I really wanted to have a special resolution for DIPG, and the reason for it not being to make it more important than other childhood cancers, but just because the fact that the devastation of it, the severity of the experience, and how strongly marginalized it's been. Nobody really knows about it. It exemplifies in a very powerful way what the childhood cancer experience is. And one of the things that the childhood cancer community has been trying to raise awareness for the last 5-10 years is the lack of research funding for our kids. In fact, that only 3.8% normally of our budget for cancer research goes to pediatrics. And,
oh, really? Only 3.8%?
Yeah, our government's our greatest contributor. So it's even less than the private sector, pharmaceutical companies, which, of course, their excuse is always making profits, and it's not a profitable investment.
Right.
And and then you have cancer foundations. The big ones give maybe 1-2% and say that they're helping cure pediatric cancer and use children in their advertising. And then, you know, it's not to knock the couple million here and there they might throw into it, but when you consider how much it costs to bring a drug to market, it's really, and then what is categorized as research is always, you know, sometimes relative as well. So basically, we've had pediatric cancer in general has been underfunded for, you know, historically for a long time. And brain cancer is now, you know, like leukemia used to be, death sentence brain cancer is. It's responsible for, again, it's responsible for most of the most of the childhood cancer deaths. And of those brain cancer deaths, DIPG is responsible for the majority of those, like 70%, 80%.
Really?
So it's a certain killer, and there's a regular number of kids every year that get it. It's around 350 just in our country, and they all die. And so we just believe it's time to at least insert our values of saving the dying and children, that they have that be greater consideration in the research grant process. And that's exactly what our resolution talks about. The Awareness Day is important, especially because most of the funding is, as I said before, solely the burden of the foundations begun by bereaved parents. Literally, as a collective group, they are single-handedly funding DIPG research, which is some of the most fruitful and helpful research for all of oncology that we have. And so, really, the
are
whole
any
idea
of the physician? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's just the whole. All I was going to finish by saying is the whole idea of it not being a good investment is ridiculous because it's some of the most important research we have.
Exactly. Are any of the physicians that are focused, diagnosed, giving treatment for DIPG, are any of them going beyond that and doing and advocating for research or is anything happening there?
Some of our most outspoken physicians are Michelle Manji at Stanford University. She's one of our top DIPG researchers. There's Dr. Sui Den at Dana-Farber in New York. He's started an experimental procedure where they access the tumor directly because it's very difficult for any systemic chemotherapy to actually get to the tumor, at least not the way we do it in the United States. So he in our country spearheaded the microcatheter insertion to the tumor. They have gone a few steps further in the UK with that. Currently, a lot of people are leaving the country for a treatment in Monterrey, Mexico that is showing promise. People go where the hope is. Unfortunately, that's $500,000 a year that they have to raise. Again, the burden's always on us to raise money to save our kids, and if we can't raise the money, we can't do the experiment. So,
The one that's in Mexico, is that an experiment, or is that an actual procedure that has promise?
Both. It's all everything phase one for this disease. But they're using like three different modalities. They do have a system whereby they can more directly get the medicine to the brain. It's insertion of medicine. It's arterial delivery rather than intravenous. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that here. And there are a couple other modalities that they use. Actually, it's on one of my CC Talk radio shows. But I don't go into any detail about it because I'm not an expert. But bottom line is that globally we need more communication, allowance for communication between our scientists and researchers. Our FDA has been a big has thrown us some challenges. Let's just say
Wendy, you probably are aware that Wendy came up against the FDA, and yet they went to court for the trial because Neil was already in the process of the trial, and they won. So he was able to complete the trial.
I know, but it was interrupted, and there are just so many factors. You don't know what
to
say, and maybe it's
right.
So
all the blue, the tape, whatever. That interferes where he did have to wait until that went through. And, it's a matter of life and death. But this is the way it is. But with voices, see, and this is the thing, with all the moms' voices for so many other things as well, this is a time. If there was ever a time to voice your, what's important to you, to make changes, it is now. It is a time for now for that.
Yes. And this
and
is
you
for
must
kids.
Feel
I mean,
that you must feel that energy, Janet, because it's tangible.
Yes, it's palpable. I I mean, this is really about valuing our children. This resolution in Congress, it's the designation is H.R. 69. It was first introduced in 2016 to the last Congress, and they have a different designation. It was H.R. 586. But this one that was introduced in 2017, H.R. 69, designates May 17th as DIPG Awareness Day to concur with another foundation's efforts to get as many states as possible to have that particular day in honor of their son. And so we just decided when it was reintroduced that we needed to all be together on the same page with that day. We have a much better chance of getting it to pass if, you know, we can show that concurrence among the states, which is awesome. California was the first state. Jack's Angels worked with Assemblyman Scott Wilk, who's now my state senator, and my state senator then is my congressman now, and that's why we were able to work on the national bill. So that's just
and so
a
he really listened.
History. Yes, yes. Well, wow. Yes. And originally, Scott Wilk, who's my state senator, he just did the California one again this year. I sat near him at a Chamber of Commerce event, and he had my flyer, and he was so moved by it. He was like, we're going to do something about this year. And that was 2014. And that's when he did the first one. This resolution now that we have in Congress, its main goal is to raise awareness to A, of course, DIPG, pediatric brain cancer, being the deadliest killer of our kids with cancer, and also raising awareness to the inadequacy of our medical research system to adequately fund pediatric cancer in general. And it asks boldly that years of life lost and mortality rates have greater consideration in our medical research system. That's the most important thing about the bill to me. The date is great, and an awareness day to raise money is great, but to have those very real issues addressed of our children being neglected was my number one reason for doing it, for the childhood cancer community in general.
Yeah. Wow.
And our work still continues. I have a couple of advocates from our group in D.C. right now, following up from our last trip in April, and we're also going to go back in September and December. We have to get it passed this year, or we have to start the process all over again. So,
Oh boy.
It only needs a House vote. Only needs a House vote, but they sideline it in committee. There are all sorts of unspoken House rules, and which I've actually dug up and found what they are, and realized that our resolution absolutely is valid and has every reason to get a House vote. But it's a challenge because the House is not very functional right now. So we're working on the Senate to try to start a Senate one, too.
Good.
And a letter to the
president.
So
who do you have helping you? Is it the group of parents that are part of the advocacy? I mean, to do all this writing and know who to connect with and where to go? And it must be such an education.
We have pre-prepared information packets for members of Congress that we just update as we go along. And right now, I have several foundations and individual advocates for children with cancer who are working together to do this. I have also, you know, there's a gal who's very strong in our group in New Jersey who's a nurse who actually prepared a whole presentation on DIPG for both lay people and medical people alike. So there, we have a really diverse group of individual advocates and foundations, you know, parents together, and we're just, you know, wherever your strength is, that's where you go to work.
Right.
They're really, I'm just thrilled that our little, I call it the little bill that could, has the support it does in our community.
Is there any research or doctors in Boston that are addressing this at some level?
Oh, sure. Dana-Farber, of course, Harvard University.
Right.
That
about children's
group is very big. Yes, Boston Children's. I know Dr. Kieran there was the one who actually spearheaded the initial clinical trial for biopsy because we didn't have the biopsies are very risky, and we couldn't do them here until I think it was just like 2.5 years ago, three years ago maybe they started doing that. So he's a very prominent one, but yes, all of those and Children's Hospital in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, is an excellent contributor. We have one group on the East Coast, the Children's Brain Tumor Tissue Consortium, and on the West Coast began a group called PNOC, the Pacific Pediatric Neuro-Oncology Consortium. And these two groups, each the PNOC has grown from a couple universities in California to 18 different institutions across the United States. And so together, these groups are working on this project called Project Open DIPD, where they are all contributing to this research and sharing the genetic information, sharing tissues. That's been a huge, any rare disease, like any childhood cancer, there's always this issue of having enough data, you know? And so everybody working together that way, and there was a DIPD registry of genetic data and samples put together by the what's called the DIPG Collaborative, which is a group of upwards of 25 foundations that fund research. They initiated that that registry, gosh, I think it was in 2011, 2012. It was right around the time when I just even became aware that this group even existed. Social media has done so much for us, I can't say. From when my son was diagnosed, you felt like you were in Antarctica, to now you see them being diagnosed and dying every day. You realize it's not so rare, that it's, you know, common occurrence in the brain cancer community. So,
Wow.
Quite a ride. But thanks to social media, we have groups now where we can get support, share information, and people can realize they're not so alone. And I think that's the only reason why I've gotten support for our bill. And this
if
group
only you
in
could,
Maryland.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What's that?
Go right ahead.
The group in Maryland, Jenny Mosier, heading the Michael Mosier Defeat DIPG Foundation, they've grown hugely. They're huge funders of research. I mean, my hat is so off to her. She used to work for the Justice Department for Eric Holder, and so she retired from that in order to do her foundation. And so in 2016, when we were first introducing our national bill, she was trying to get her state and as many others. I think they had 3 or 4 in 2016, and then 21 last year, and we had 31 this year, states with a DIPG awareness resolution. So if it weren't for her work and that whole group and other foundations coming in and helping out, that's all making it happen.
Yes.
And it's because of social media to a large extent.
Yes. I mean, it has brought so many together in a positive way and making change, something that could have never been done, you know, 30 years ago. So what do you, like for the listeners, what could they do? What could anyone do to help the cause and get more funding for research?
Yes. Well, there are several foundations across the country that contribute to research. There's a project right now going on called Hike for Pennies. If you go to FOUR pennies.org, you can follow a hiker who's doing the entire Pacific Crest Trail raising funds for DIPG research. That's an easy way to donate. If you want to help awareness and our bill, simply call your congressman and say, I want you to co-sponsor H-Res 69, the National DIPG Awareness Resolution. These kids need it. That's all it takes.
So it's just like the website, H-Res 69.
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's what's called a simple house resolution, meaning it just needs a House vote, doesn't have to have the Senate or the President sign it. It's just a House resolution. So that's an HRES instead of an HR. So it's HRES 69, and it's the DIPG awareness resolution.
Okay.
That's a biggie.
Yes. So they would call their local...
You can call your congressional district office in the field wherever you live, or you can call your congressman's number in D.C. and definitely write them an email. And on our website at hres69.org and also at jacksangels.org, we have information packets. Like, it's a cover letter, the actual text of the bill, and then the supporters of it. A little packet like that, it's 3 or 4 pages, that can use information, any information from it to enhance or support their ask for their congressman. We're distributing them to as many members as we can in the last few visits that we've had. Yes.
Yes. And then I wanted to bring up your show again. How can they hear that? Childhood Cancer Talk Radio. And it's an advocacy for children and cancer and the Relay for Kids program. Right?
Yeah, it's at TogiNet, TogiNet.com. So it's an internet show, and it's weekly on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
4 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay, so for those out there, we know a number of families with little ones that have transitioned from different kinds of cancer, leukemia, things of that sort. So just to hear other parents and other topics that are around childhood cancer is important. And the whole idea of listening and hearing others, they don't feel alone, like they're at least they have support. Yeah, and it's comforting.
And there are resources for them. You know, pretty much every show has, you know, whoever our guests are, have contact information or helpful organizations where they can get more information or get support. And I try to make it as varied as I can. I do have a lot of brain cancer patients on, especially during, or families, especially around May, because it's Brain Tumor Awareness Month. But we've had everything from BPDCN leukemia, which is a very unknown and difficult to treat leukemia, to Batten's disease, which isn't even a cancer, it's a neurological deadly disorder. I think it's important to feature, you know, we are a childhood cancer community, but at the same time, you know, pediatric disease shares all the issues we do insofar as lack of attention and urgent need for solutions. So we do what we can. Almost all of our families are trying to fundraise and support treatment or support care or support just getting through life, because it turns your life completely upside down to have a diagnosis like that.
That's right. Do you have any understanding or knowledge on why some of these pediatric type of diseases are happening to young adults? Sometimes even, someone that is 40, it's a disease that a child usually ends up with. One of my nieces from a rare leukemia that was really a pediatric. It's interesting. You start to think about, you know, the quality of food in this country, the water that's diluted with pharmaceuticals, all the different things that
pesticides,
plastics, everything that over, you know, only for so much time can the human deal with it, and then the body starts to break down.
Well, we all become sleuths, I think, because there's so little actual research that's targeted into finding causes and conditions. Most of the time they don't want you to look. But,
yeah,
for our kids, they're starting to do that more now with the genomics. But absolutely, it makes you think about the whole human growth process and how it, you know, it varies from one individual to another. It always seems that with this DIPG, because you wonder, about the release of growth hormone and times when the disease becomes active. There are rare cases when the disease just goes dormant, for several years, even.
Wow.
Then all of a sudden it'll start growing again and kill them, and we don't know why, but it seems to be tied up with the individual growth pattern, and we still have, and the growth hormone, and how things change metabolically and with the endocrine system. It's ripe for research. Really encourage young people to who want to be scientists to go into the field, because their brilliance is needed desperately, and it's been an historic problem of in academia in the past, where like very noted researcher Kathy Warren at NIH is a big DIPG researcher, and she relayed to me, I think it was during the show, that she was told it would be professional suicide to take on DIPG, because you want to, in academia, they want you to take something on that's going to be successful, because your whole professional success is about that, and not, but of course, she was committed to her calling, and most scientists are, and they're truly crusaders out there that are making the research happen right now. So we just encourage young people to go into it if they feel passionate about it, follow it. You'll have more support today than we had, just a couple decades ago.
Right.
Really important.
Right. Well, we have come to the end of the show, Janet, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your journey, Jack, the family, and DIPG, and all that you're doing. And for everyone out there, please share this show with other people, because awareness and education is power. Thank you, Janet. All right.
Thank you for having me.
Until next time. Thank you.
And we've been
bye for now.
Before.
Bye.
Until the next time, Kids for Love Project challenges everyone to create a way of serving others in need. Whether it's a nonprofit or helping kids in your neighborhood, we can all make a difference. The gift received in giving of self heals everyone and everything on the planet. Let's unite and build a universal circle of kids, all making a difference for a brighter world. Kids for Love Project, celebrating kids that empower others. To learn more, go to our Kids for Love Project Facebook page.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.